Blog Talk Radio.
I release all disappointment from my mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional body. 'Cause I know that spirit guides me and love lives inside me. That's why today I take life as it comes. Good evening, everyone. Welcome again to Higher Consciousness. I am your host and guest this evening. My name is Professor Jamila Franklin, and I am so very, very honored and pleased to have you join us again this evening. Higher Consciousness is a show that deals with metaphysical topics from a metaphysical perspective, spiritual perspective, and we talk about cultural topics, social topics, economic topics, and political topics. We talk about everything, but from a metaphysical perspective. And as always, I am so very, very honored and pleased and thankful that you have joined us this evening. We have been on the air since October 22nd, 2012. And since that time, we have had over 46,600 downloads, which is very, very good. And we're very thankful to each and every one of you for making that a possibility. We really appreciate your support of the show, your continued support, and we also appreciate your telling your friends and family members about the show. This show is heard not only nationally, but it's also heard internationally. And we've had guests on the show who have been from other countries. And we continue to ask you to join us each week. We air from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Monday evenings. And we have guests on our show occasionally. Last week we had a wonderful guest. This week, as I said, I am going to be the guest. Last week we had June Klein, who is a humorist, and she was just absolutely wonderful. And sometimes it's really good to have humor in our lives and to laugh. Sometimes we take ourselves too seriously. I know I'm guilty of that at times. So I wanted to have June come on the show to talk to us about joy, having joy in our lives and how we can experience life from a joyful perspective and not be so serious and intense all the time. This evening, as I stated before, I am the guest as well as the host. And my background is I am a certified metaphysician, certified Reiki master, certified aromatherapist, and I teach on college campuses. I teach psychology, diversity, ethics, teach a myriad of courses, and I'm also the proud owner of Jamila's Scents, which is a natural aromatherapy company that produces aromatherapy blends for all kinds of ailments. If you have any kind of problem, it can be dealt with using aromatherapy, and aromatherapy products are very good for relieving stress from the body. And as you may know, 75 to 95% of the diseases are stress-related. So if you can relieve the stress, then the disease will, disappear. So my products are online on Amazon.com. But if you would like to get more information about my services, you can go to www.oyendeenterprises.com. Again, you can go to www.oyendeenterprises.com. That's spelled O-Y-I E-N-D-E, another E, N-T-E-R, P-R-I-S-E-S, again, .com. The name of my website is www.oyendeenterprises.com, and you will see all of the services that my company provides for people, and we also provide private holistic life coaching, a myriad of services. So, and if anyone would like to talk with me, too, after the show or during the show, after the show, the number is 770-808-8051, 770-808-8051. And if you would like to call in tonight and talk with me this evening, the call-in number this evening live is 1-818-572-8023. And press 1. Again, the call-in number is 1-818-572-8023. And press 1. And this evening, I'm always so very excited about my show and about the topics, because these topics are near and dear to me, to my heart. That's why I have them on, I give them airtime, because I want to have my listening audience either become exposed to the topics or to get more information and for us to have a dialogue. So I welcome you and the listening audience to talk with me this evening about the topic that we're going to talk about. The book is E-Squared by Pam Grout. And as always, all of the shows are archived, and so you can listen to the show after we finish this evening. It becomes immediately available, archived, and you can listen to the show 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and refer your friends to the show as well. Okay? Like I said, tonight, the topic is E-Squared by Pam Grout, and I am the host and the guest. So I would like for you to join me to discuss the number one New York Times bestseller, E-Squared. Okay? E-Squared could best be described as a lab manual with simple experiments that prove reality is malleable, consciousness trumps matter, and you shape your life with your mind. Yes, you heard that right. The 9 experiments, each of which can be conducted with absolutely no money and very little time expenditure, demonstrate that spiritual principles are as dependable as gravity, as consistent as Newton's laws of motion. Rather than take it on faith, E-Squared invites you to prove the following principles. There is an invisible energy force or field of infinite possibilities. 1. 2. You impact the field and draw from it according to your beliefs and expectations. 3. Your connection to the field provides accurate and unlimited guidance. 4. The universe is limitless, abundant, and strangely accommodating. Now, I would invite you to call in to join me as we discuss the principles that I just outlined a few minutes ago. Now, for a lot of you, because we've covered this other topic before, a lot of you are familiar with the DVD, The Secret. So, and some of you are also familiar with another metaphysical DVD, and it deals with going down the rabbit hole. And a lot of you, too, also may have been looking at some of the series with Morgan Freeman, The Wormhole, which means it's talking about the universe and energy and how everything is energy. So what we're going to talk about tonight is this wonderful book. If you have not gotten the book, please get the book. It is wonderful. It's on the New York Times bestsellers list. And I had to get the book because I had seen that it was so well received. And I wanted to see what all the commotion was all about. So, as I stated before, a lot of you have heard the secret. You have seen this. You've heard the secret on air. I mean, you've heard the secret in terms of the DVD. I mean, the CD, and then you've also seen the secret because they have a DVD out. So what I wanted to do this evening is discuss in detail this wonderful book, E Squared. E Squared was written by, like I said, Pam Grout, and she goes over the different principles that I just mentioned. So we're going to sit back as if you are talking to me in your living room, and we're having a fireside chat, just talking about energy. Everything on this planet is energy. Quantum physicists have discovered that. And so now what we're doing, we're combining science with quote-unquote spirituality, quote-unquote religion, because for the longest time they kept those things separate. Quantum scientists would not give a lot of credibility. Well, they would, but regular physicists and chemists would not give a lot of credibility to spirituality, and people who were very spiritual, particularly people who were very religious, gave minimal acknowledgement or respect to anything that was scientific. So now what we're doing is with quantum physics is kind of like blending the two. Quantum physicists are people who know that everything comes from energy, and they also understand the spiritual principles involved with it. Stephen Hawking, Hawkins, is a renowned scientist. And you may have seen him if you watch the Science Channel. Not Sci-Fi, but the Science Channel. He's been on there. He's wheelchair-bound, and he can't talk with his mouth, but his brain cells communicate with people. And you've seen him. He's in a wheelchair with glasses, Caucasian gentleman, and his body looks contorted. But anyway, he's a well-known scientist. And he did some research, and within the past 6 months or a year, no more than a year, he found the God G-O-D particle, which was this energetic substance that ordered everything around it. So all the other molecules and everything became ordered when this God particle was present. And not for me, do I need to have science confirm or validate that infinite spirit exists? But I guess he wanted to use science to prove to people that the God particle, in fact, does exist. So what he did is he came out with this research, and it just really exploded, and scientists were really amazed, and it's something that everyone else has known for years, especially if people are metaphysical. We never question it, but for people who are hardcore scientists, sometimes they question things that they cannot see, and they have to use their limited and finite brains to try to explain everything that exists. So he was able to use science to confirm that God, in fact, does exist, which is interesting. But anyway, with Pam Grout's book is E Squared. Like I said, it's the number one New York Times bestseller. She's since come out with a book called E Cubed. But in this book, she has different chapters, and we're going to discuss them. The first one is Experiment 1, The Dude Abides Principle. What she does, which is really interesting, for each of her chapters, she gives you an experiment to do to prove to you that that your mind and your thoughts do have a lot to do with your reality, and that they can control situations around you. So she doesn't want you to take her information at face value. She wants you to experience it. So here's one chapter, one little statement that she has in here. And I've experimented. I've done some of the experiments, and they definitely work. Seeing is believing. If you read The Secret or been in metaphysical spiritual circles for any time at all, you already know your thoughts create your reality, that there's a power in the universe that can heal, and that you and you alone design your own life. Unfortunately, there's still this tiny little problem, this one itty-bitty catch. You don't really believe it. Not really. Most of us, in fact, are still operating out of the mental architecture in of our ancestors. We think we're running our lives with our brilliant ideas and thoughts. We think we're affirming our intentions and creating new possibilities. But in reality, we're simply recycling old tapes, knee-jerk conditioning, and automatic behaviors, most of which we picked up before we were five. We're like Pavlov's dogs, simply reacting to patterns we picked up before we had the intelligence to wisely choose. Most of the thoughts we assume are our own are really the invisible and largely unquestionable beliefs we downloaded from others. So we pit our positive thoughts against our old disempowering programming. In other words, our consciousness, that force that always affects physical reality, has been hijacked. So basically what she's saying in this instance is that most of us are operating from default, and we don't even realize it. We have, and people will say, well, you know, if you create your own reality, babies come in here with certain kinds of maladies or certain kinds of conditions, and they don't have the cognitive thinking capacity. How can they create their realities? And so that isn't true. Before a baby is born, when the baby is in the womb, the baby hears every conversation, feels every emotion that the mother is experiencing. So this infant, as he or she is being formed, is taking on all of the energy of the mother and the father, is hearing everything in the environment. If there's a lot of friction or discord or fights, the baby hears all of that. So that's why babies sometimes are colicky or irritable, because they hear all of that. And so when the baby finally is born, the baby comes out with all of that energy that's been pent up within its cells. And it comes out with the energy, and it then starts expressing itself. It starts mimicking the patterns of the parents. Because some people say, oh, she acts just like her mother or her father, and he acts just like his mother or his father. That's because the baby has been picking up all of those impulses while in utero. And it's not just with the mother, from the mother, it's from everything in the environment, because the baby is picking up the energy. And everything, remember I said before, everything is energy. So we come out, you know, and we think that we come out with a clean slate. Not so. Not so. And so we're thinking we can affirm our way to perfect health. We can pray our way to perfect health. If we just affirm it, then it's going to change. No, because the subconscious mind, which really is the enforcer, and we've talked a little bit about this in previous shows, the subconscious mind is the one that's really carrying out the dictates, the thoughts. So the conscious mind is the one that's been hearing all this negative information from
before being born all the way up until whatever age you are now. So the conscious mind has been hearing these things and has believed those things as true. Like if someone is saying that you can never do math because girls just don't do math, or no one in your family has been good at math. And then people, the conscious mind would take that on as its truth and begin marinating on that. And remember, and I remember saying this in a previous show, if you think a thought 17 seconds, it becomes your reality. If you give it more than 17 seconds, it's fixed in your brain. And then it slips into the subconscious mind. Now remember, the conscious mind doesn't create anything. It's a subconscious mind. And a subconscious mind doesn't have any will of its own. It all it's doing is just taking orders from either superconscious, which we will talk about later, and I've mentioned it when I talked about the law of attraction. It's taking its orders from the superconscious or from the conscious mind. So now the conscious mind is going to only give you what it sees as being its truth. It doesn't deal with supernatural things. It only deals with concrete reality. It only deals with what it can see, what it can smell, what it can taste, and what it can hear and touch. Things dealing with the supernatural, like God and whatever, it really can't comprehend that. And so it doesn't give that anything that it can't see that much credence. It's like, okay, I've heard about this God thing, but seeing is believing. And that is why so many people go to church on Sunday, to the synagogue, to the mosque, or to the temple, or wherever their place of worship is. They go there on their holy day. And then the next day, they're back in default, full of fear, doubt, worry, anger, frustration. Because the conscious mind is telling them, okay, as long as we're in this religious house, you know, the church, the mosque, the synagogue, whatever it is, we will believe, and we're going to believe with all our hearts. But once we leave, you leave all that hocus pocus behind in terms of belief, Monday through Saturday. But Sunday, we have to go back into that and believe with all of our hearts. So the conscious mind is saying all that hocus pocus stuff is not real, so I'm not going to claim it as real. I'm going to only say the things are real are the things that I can see. So the conscious mind is telling the subconscious mind, don't you believe in God or infinite spirit or in angels? You can't really see them, so don't believe. Don't believe all that. That's hocus pocus. So then people, like I said before, who go to church and go to those religious institutions, never change on a permanent level, because when they're no longer in the atmosphere of the religious fervor of the church, of the mosque, of the temple, of whatever the house of worship is, when they're no longer congregated together, they lose perspective and they lose their faith. And so they have to congregate, you know, several times a week, because that keeps them focused and keeps them, you know, focused and believing. And there's nothing wrong with that. However, you don't have to be in a church, in a temple, in a synagogue or whatever in order for you to have a relationship with the Creator. But for them, if you don't go to church regularly, or if you don't go to the mosque regularly, or if you don't go to the temple regularly, or whatever the religious house is, then it means that, you know, you're not faithful and you're not a true believer. So the conscious mind has to keep that going. It has to say, I have to constantly remind myself. This is the conscious mind's dialogue. I have to constantly remind myself that I have to be surrounded by these things, that I'm, the only thing I can believe in are the things that I can see. So that supernatural stuff, we'll save it on Sunday, God and Jehovah, whatever. We'll talk about that on the holy days. And on the other days, we're going to deal with reality. So it says. And reality for the conscious mind is, like I said, the five senses. If it can't see it, taste it, smell it, touch it, hear it, for it does not exist. So now, herein lies the conflict. You have the conscious mind Monday through Saturday, believing in the concrete reality. Then on Sunday, all of a sudden, the conscious mind says, okay, it's a holy day, so we're going to no longer just believe in the concrete reality. We're going to now go to believing in a presence that we cannot see. But because we have been told that this presence exists, we're going to believe it. So now you have your old beliefs that God doesn't exist except on Sundays. And in Pam's book, she says, we put God and angels on the no-call list. We ask them to come into our lives, but then we black them out because we don't believe. So now you have the belief system of the conscious mind that God doesn't exist except on Sundays. So then people, that's the fundamental truth and belief for a lot of people. So then what happens? They start doing these affirmations, they start praying. Now the core belief is God really doesn't exist except on Sundays. And so then they say the affirmations don't work. And that's what Pam talks about too in her book, because they have put God in a box. It doesn't work, you know, because they're affirming, but they don't really believe except on Sunday. On Sunday, if God could just, or infinite spirit and infinite source could have all the miracles performed on Sunday, then okay, it would be a good deal. But Saturday, Monday through Saturday, no, that's not part of the programming, so the brain is not receptive to that. So what we do is we have this conflict. So you have these old beliefs that God is in a box and, you know, is up in heaven and not within you. And then you have these new beliefs saying, oh, affirm what you want, and the God within you as well as outside of you will grant you every wish because God always says yes. So you have that new belief coming up against the old belief. So then you have a conflict because you have, and the affirmations cannot work because the core belief is that anything that's dealing with the unseen can only be done at the most on Sunday, and then it can only come in a way in which the person feels comfortable. So if an angel were to appear at the foot of the person's bed, the person would have a heart attack for the most part, not everyone, but a lot of people, because the answer didn't come the way he or she thought that it would come. So you're affirming and you're saying you want all these wonderful things to happen using new thoughts and new ideas, but they can't happen because the core belief has to change. So that's what Pam was talking about in her book, when she mentions that the old beliefs come up against the new beliefs come up against the old beliefs. So and how do you change that? How do you change that? You have to have a paradigm shift. And once you have the paradigm shift, it means that you're going to give up your old way of thinking. And for most people, it has to be shown to them, you know, because they do have faith. I don't think that this is an issue of people not having faith. Not at all. I think that it's an issue of people not knowing how to use the Quran, how to use the Bible, how to use the Torah, how to use whatever spiritual or religious text that they have. Most people don't know how to use it. So they keep reciting the same old, they keep reciting the Lord's Prayer, the 91st Psalm, Isaiah 55. So it becomes rote, it becomes ritualistic because they don't know that those words are metaphysical words and those words are changing their lives because they say it, but then they go back to default. They don't want to change their lives. They want to remain the way that they are. They want everyone else around them to change, but they don't want to change. So, because mindset is fixed on what is in default. So, read what Pam says about that. Not long after I graduated from college, landed a job, and was running my own affairs, I noticed negative thoughts about money dive bombing for my attention. I found myself worrying, wondering if running out of money was imminent, questioning whether or not I could afford the new bike I wanted or the new computer I needed. One day, during an early morning jog, I suddenly got it. Those thoughts were exact clones of comments my mother had made when I was growing up. And even though there was no evidence to support those fears in my own life, I had downloaded them straight into my consciousness without even being aware of it. Needless to say, that wasn't a paradigm that served my highest good. I consciously rewrote the paradigm that ran my financial life to, I can afford anything I want. In fact, I am so prosperous, I never need worry again. As an independent freelance writer, I also appointed God as the CEO of my career. I figured there was no way I could run this fickle writing business with the faulty wiring and negative thoughts I downloaded from my past. Clearly, I needed a new energetic imprint. So basically, she's saying, okay, like I mentioned before, a lot of us have thoughts from utero, from when we were in our mother's wombs, from our parents. Oh, you know, save for a rainy day, or they have some saying that they used to say that we keep running over and over and over and over again in our minds. I've seen myself do that. I am constantly catching myself with the thoughts from my mom, who meant well. She just wanted me to be cautious because she didn't want me to have a life of lack. But by being cautious, I was on the path of creating what she didn't want for me and what I didn't want for me, because I was always looking for a rainy day, looking for the other shoe to fall. So there was no joy surrounding money. It was like something that you were told not to covet, not to want, but it was something that was necessary and that you had to have, because in this country, in this society, you need money. You can barter up to a point, but you need money. You can't go to the gas station and say, okay, let's barter gas pump. No, you have to put a debit card in there, a credit card in there, or some cash, or some change or something. Go to the attendant and give the person money so he can release the pump for you to use. So money is definitely something we need to feel comfortable with. And money is only God in expression. But if you've heard your mom say, you know, or your dad, like Jack Canfield mentioned in The Secret, his dad would say to him, "Who do you think I am, Rockefeller?" I said, "Wow." My mom used to say the same thing. So now here you are, this prosperity-conscious person, really on the path of changing your life. But you've downloaded that negative information from your parents, and it's operating on the system. It's your DOS system. It's, even though you've overlaid it with positive affirmations and prayers and affirmative thinking, what's really operating in the subconscious mind are those negative thoughts from your mom or from your parents or from someone else. So therefore, even though you make small gains with money, you then lose footing because that original programming is still there, because you've downloaded it. And so doing the affirmations and the prayers and jumping on one foot and circling around the tree, whatever your ritual is, will not have long-lasting effects. Why? Because you have to deal with the programming that you've downloaded from your environment or from your parents. So what she does is she gives an exercise. Pam gives an exercise because she knows that you have to reprogram the mind to have the mind not feel threatened by your shifting, but to understand that its purpose has been served. And all the mice, the cognitive brain only is to state your desires, not your wants, because wants come from a place of lack. But But state your desires. Say, you know, I desire to be ballerina by age or whatever. I desire to be a prominent neurosurgeon and go to the best schools, and go to the best school in my field. So what you do is you state your desires and you work consciously on having, it's not just having, it's just stating them, but you do this, everything, like I said, too, I think, before, is you have to do it a minimum of 90 days, this new thinking, because you have to uproot the old thinking, and it takes 90 days a minimum of 90 days to break old habits. So now you state your desires, and then step back and say, okay, and when you feel mom's voice coming up, well, you know you can't raise $1,000 in a week. How are you going to have that happen? You only have your job and blah, blah, blah. All those negative tapes that's coming from the information you've downloaded from your parents. It keeps coming. So now it's left your conscious mind and it's in your subconscious mind. Your subconscious mind now is playing those negative tapes over and over and over again. Okay? And remember, it is the subconscious mind that creates your reality or enacts what you want to have happen. So it doesn't have any agenda of its own. It's just following orders from the conscious mind or from the superconscious mind. So now with the conscious mind, what you do is say, okay, whenever, and this is an exercise I want you to consider, whenever you think about money, and you get that kick in your stomach, like, because that's the fear. Don't run away from it. Don't try to pray it out or any of that. Just sit with it and say, okay, where is this coming from? Because I'm doing these affirmations, and so that lets me know that I'm interested in changing, but I still keep hearing these negative tapes in my head. Where is this coming from? So once you identify, you know, whether or not it's your mom or your dad or someone else, then once you identify it, you can then begin the process of healing it. But if you never identify it, if you keep pretending like it's not there, how can you heal? Because you're not acknowledging a part of you. So once you acknowledge that it's there, then you start saying, okay. And you will feel it in your body. You will feel it in your stomach, in your chest area, in your arms and legs. And that's where that energy, that fear about money gets stored. In your stomach, in your heart, in your legs or whatever. That's where it gets stored. So now you're doing these affirmations, like I mentioned before, so you're like people did with The Secret. My life was supposed to change. Because I was doing the affirmations and it didn't change. I said, well, your core belief, even though you're saying what you supposedly want, your core belief is, I don't care how many times she does Hail Mary. I don't believe it. I don't believe anything that she has to say. So that's the tape coming from your subconscious mind. It's not on board yet. So what you do is you have to train it. That's right. You have to train it. For those of you who have children, you know that you had to train your children. So your subconscious mind, as I've mentioned in the past, is like a runaway child, and it's just going amok. It's running amok. So you have to train it, and you train it in different ways. So we're going to talk about how you can train it. But before we get to that, we're going to talk about FP, which is the field of potentiality. And I'm going to talk about the training and the experiment in about 5 minutes. Everything around you is energy. And the things that you desire, we never use the word want because want represents lack. Whatever you desire, desires you. Whatever you desire also desires you and is seeking you. Even though that may not seem like it's true, it is. It desires you and is seeking you. And the only thing is that because we haven't trained our brains to see, that whatever we're asking for, God has already said yes to it, because we, and that's what I'm going to show you tonight with this the experiments. I think I'm going to be able to go over most, if not all, of the experiments. I'm not sure if we can go over 9, but when Christopher Columbus got lost and came to America and thought he was in India, he named the native people here Indians because he thought he was in India. Their brain could not physically see them because their brain had not been attuned to what Caucasians looked like. They only knew when they saw the water, waves in the ocean. Their brains couldn't even see the ships because they had no point of reference. They couldn't see it. So when they showed up on land, that's the first time that they knew about Christopher Columbus, when they actually walked upon the shores. They couldn't see them coming over in the ships. They were invisible to them because their eyes were not programmed to know what Caucasians looked like. So the same thing with babies. Babies can see things that we have been programmed to say we can't see. They see spirits, they see lights, they see everything. So when you look at little babies, they're very seldom are they looking in your face. They're looking all around you because you have a light show going on. You have all of these energies floating around your head, different colors, and that's what they're looking at. And they're also looking at beings from another side. They can see them. And you can see them, you know, playing with them sometimes, and it looks like you're looking at the baby, wondering what he or she is doing. And they're playing with spirits on the other side because in their brains, they have not been taught that they cannot see things on the other side. So getting back to the field of possibilities and potentiality, there are millions of ways in which all of your prayers can be answered. But we restrict God, and like I said before, we put God on the no-call list. And we tell God how we want the Infinite Spirit to deliver our wishes. God, okay, I want him to look like this, and I want him to show up at 9 o'clock, and I want blah, blah, blah. Or I want her to look like this, and I want her to show up at this time wearing this. So that may not be the divine selection, but because we don't know what the divine selection is, because we've told our brains to only look for what we want and how we want it, so everything else that could be far better and greater for us, we never give it an intention because we don't see it. It's not part of our paradigm. Because if you have not been exposed to certain things, you then will only gravitate towards those things to which you've been exposed, even though they may not be the greatest for you. You don't know any differently. So a lot of opportunities that are out there for us, we miss. And we miss them because of finite thinking. So FP, according to Pam Grout, is the field of potentiality. And What the Bleep is the other movie that came out before The Secret. And they talked about that. There's so many choices. And I had Diane Collins on my show before. She did a phenomenal job talking about quantum physics and having choices. We limit our choices. I was talking to some students today, high school students, and asking how many of them want to go outside of Georgia. Only one or two people raised her hand. And I said, wow, they have limited themselves because of fear. They don't think they can get enough money, or they don't think they can get into the schools or whatever. So I told them, if you don't apply, I can guarantee you that you won't get in. But anything else, you have a strong likelihood or chance of getting in. But they had eliminated themselves or eliminated that option even before they seriously pursued it and investigated it. So with the field of potentiality, it talks about being limitless. The sky is the limit. I saw on Facebook, and then another response was, no, the mind is. The mind is the limit. It limits your options. So Pam talked about being able to have your brain start seeing things that it normally would not see. So with the first experiment, she talks about putting out to the universe, before she even does that, she said, set up an intention just to ask the universe, Creator Jehovah, to bless you. Within 48 hours, everything she does has like a 48-hour turnaround. And so she said that she said to Spirit, okay, I want you, if this thing is real, if you're real, I want you to give me a miracle within 48 hours. Show me something that I know is so out of the norm that I would know that it came only from you, that it's not something that I made up and it's something out of the ordinary. So she asked for that. She put some things on her wish list, a computer, a mountain bike, and another thing, I can't remember. Two of the things showed up within 48 hours, and one of the other items showed up within a year. She set her intention that she would receive this, and then she said what you could do is to set your intention just for a blessing, and not even tell Spirit what the blessing should be. And if it shows up, then you would know that it's something out of the ordinary. I'll tell you what I did. I said, okay, let me test this to see if this has any validity. I said, I'm going to release it to Spirit. I'm not going to tell Spirit what my blessing should be. And I walked into my backyard, and for the first time ever, I saw this huge bunny rabbit. And it looked at me, and I looked at it, and I said, oh, my goodness. And without even going into my thinking brain, my spiritual mind, my superconscious mind said, that's your blessing. And I said, wow, thank you for my blessing. Thank you for my blessing. Because I didn't see the bunny before I set my intention, and I've not seen the bunny in my backyard since then. So I knew that that was something out of the ordinary. So what you can do is just ask Spirit, say, okay, you know, I heard Professor Franklin on her show talking about the fact that we create our own reality, and we can set an intention, and we can give it a time frame, and it will manifest. Let me just put this to the test. Let me just see if I can create my create a reality. Let me just see. And just, this is your first test. Within 48 hours, set an intention, and then say, okay, I'm going to see. And don't ask for something that you know will show up, like, you know, to have someone blow his or her horn. You know that that's going to happen. But something that's really out of the ordinary, and you would know because your spirit within you would tell you, aha, this is something different. This is not the mainstream thing. Something different has happened here. So that's the first thing. Ask for a blessing. And then once you get that, then record what the blessing is, you know, and ask for it within 48 hours. And it's going to be so out of the ordinary that you will have to pay attention to. So some people may say, a bunny rabbit is not out of the ordinary. Yes, a bunny rabbit coming to my yard in the middle of the day, staring at me, a big bunny rabbit, is out of the ordinary because they usually hide during the day. Where I live, they don't usually come out. So set your intention for that, and this 48 hours, it is going to show up, but you want to be alert enough to recognize it when it does show up. Now, for the second experiment, she said, and if anyone would like to talk to me or ask me questions about this, please feel free to call me at 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. Again, the call-in number is 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. The other experiment that she talks about is twofold. After you have seen your manifestation with the first one, then you start getting more specific. Because the first one, you just set an intention, and the universe honored it. The second one, you're training your brain. So with the second one, she said, and she told quite a few people to do this, to say that you're going to see sunset beige cars. Set your intention to see, to focus only on sunset beige cars. You would be amazed at the number of sunset beige cars, which have always been there, you would now focus on. they've always been there. But because your focus was not on sunset beige cars, you overlooked them. You overlooked them. So with this particular exercise, you're now fine-tuning it. You're training your brain not to be like that runaway child that I mentioned before and having temper tantrums. You're training it to be focused and to stay on point. So you're telling your brain, okay, I'm going to pay attention. I'm going to stay in the now, like Eckhart Tolle talks about. You're not in the future. You're not in the past. You're staying present. You're in the now. You're in the now, and you're calling it forth. You're calling it forth. You're calling it forth. So you are bringing forth a lot of your thinking and paying attention at things that you normally would not have paid attention to, and it's making you stay present. And rather than thinking about the future and the past, this particular exercise keeps you in the present because you have to be alert so you can see when these sunset beige cars pass you. So you have to stay alert. So that's part one of part two of the second experiment. So the first experiment we talked about, what did we talk about? We talked about having you ask for a blessing, and in 48 hours, acknowledging and seeing it when it shows up. It doesn't have to be Moses parting the Red Sea. It could be something very simple, but you know that it came as a result of your putting forth the intention and asking. And this, and experiment number two, the first part was to have your brain focus on sunset beige cars, and you would be amazed. And what you should do for experiment two is write down the number of sunset beige cars that you come across. Those cars are no different than the ones that were there that you were in your neighborhood before, but you just didn't pay attention to them. So now you're focusing more on the now and seeing in the now, and you're paying attention. So part two of experiment two is start saying to yourself, you're going to see butterflies. After you see, do the experiment, the first experiment of sunset beige cars, looking for those, then you say, okay, I'm now having my brain focus on what I wanted to focus on. It's not a runaway brain anymore. It's becoming more focused. So now I'm going to set my intention, even if it's in the wintertime, that I will see butterflies. Now, these butterflies could be on people's clothing, could be in the hair, you know, a butterfly pin in the hair, so, or a calligraphy card with butterflies on the outside of the card. But you're going to set your intention that you're going to see butterflies. Okay? And so what this is doing is having the brain weed out all that extraneous information and focus only on the sunset beige cars in the beginning and on the butterflies. Okay? And this is a wonderful exercise. I did that one as well. All of these exercises I did. And it worked. It really, truly worked. So, as again, if you feel you have a question about the field of potential, of potentiality, feel free to give us a call, and we can discuss any of your questions and how you can do it. This is making spirituality become real and more realistic. Okay, so that's the field of potentiality. And always, as she says, ask for it to happen in 48 hours. So, and then you write down the number of butterflies, and you write down the number of sunset beige cars. You write all of that down. Okay. So, and at first I was a little hesitant. I was, oh, I'm not sure if that's going to work. And yeah, it sounds fine, but I doubt if it will work. And it really, really did. And I was so surprised. I was pleasantly surprised. Okay. So, now, and Pam tells you how to stay in the now and not operate outside of the now. Operating outside of the now means you're thinking about the future or you're thinking about the past. And you have no control of either one. The past has already happened, and the future is going to be dictated or created by what you do in the now. So the now is the most powerful point in your life, the now. Not the past, not the future, but the now. And so she says, when I find my consciousness operating outside the now, which is unfortunately a great percentage of the time, I gently remind myself of this analogy. The UPS driver just delivered to my house every single thing I've ever wanted. But because I've left the building, I don't even realize it. I'm out hunting for paltry substitutes. Everything is right there. Once I bring my consciousness back to the timelessness of the now, which is true, we're always dealing with the past or dealing with the future, and we miss out on everything that's happening now. This moment right now will become history within the next 10 minutes, so enjoy the moment while you're in it. Okay. And she says, we've named it difficult. The power to create without thoughts is a piece of cake. That's not even up for debate. But we keep telling our friends and especially ourselves that it's hard or that we're still working on it. Just notice in the next couple of days how often you affirm it's hard or challenging. Pay attention to how often you say, things have always been like that, or, quote, it runs in my family, end quote. We spend so much time talking about what doesn't work that we miss the whole point, namely that we have the power to create something that does work. Okay? So, now, like I said, I've given you an experiment to test and to help train your brain. And then the purpose of this book is to release you from imprisonment of your illusions, to help you set aside the manufactured press release you believe to be reality. The good news is you don't have to change a single one of your behaviors. All you have to do is change your mind. So once you start thinking limited thoughts, like I said, the students that I talked to, a lot of them were thinking limited thoughts. Oh, I can't get into an Ivy League school. Oh, I don't want to leave home. Oh, you know, it's scary leaving home. All those thoughts are limiting your future and wonderful possible outcomes. So the first thing is to get in touch with the thoughts like we have done, and just decide that you want something different. You know, so, okay. Now, what she says, too, is the reason most of our minds are devoted to things that we do not want, and our positive intentions occupy a tiny sliver of our minds. The rest is focused on the problems we hope that intentions will eliminate. So you pray and pray and pray, and you hope that it's going to be eliminated. No, because you have a greater fear, even though you're saying that, you know, you want to become financially stable and whatever, and you are financially stable. That's your affirmation. I'm financially stable, and all my debts are paid, and all those wonderful things. You're scripting it. But then you say, this doesn't work. I've been scripting it and writing it and talking about it and affirming it, and it hasn't worked. And the reason why it hasn't worked is because, like I said before at the beginning of the show, there's a core belief that's canceling it out. Oh, you know, you'll never get the money, or you'll never get the promotion. You're too young. You're too old. Or, you know, money doesn't grow in trees. All those kinds of things. But you're saying, I am wealthy. I am healthy. I am opulent. You're saying that with your mouth, but the subconscious brain, which is what? It's the enforcer. It doesn't believe you. It's really hearing what your soul is saying. Your soul is saying things like, no, it's not true. It's not true. Okay, I have a caller. Greetings. Welcome to Higher Consciousness.
Thank you. Greetings. I was sorry to interrupt you. I just got on and kind of, I don't know if you can bring me just quickly up to speed on how to manifest this.
Oh, sure. I was just saying that our minds create our limited reality, and our minds are so, so powerful. You know, we underestimate the minds, the thinking part, and I was given some exercises. So the first exercise in the book is called E Squared by Pam Grout. There are 9 experiments. The first exercise to do is to tell your brain, I'm going to test this. I heard Professor Franklin saying that I can manifest and I can, because God is right there. God is always saying yes, infinite spirit. Whatever you want, you can have, but we block it. So this is basically to get the thinking brain out of the way so it can come to us. So the way to do it is we have to train it. And one thing to do is to, because it's going to say, oh, yeah, I believe you on Sunday, but Monday through Saturday, that's hogwash. But on Sunday, yes, I believe that all things are possible. You know, in church, I believe that. But outside of church, no. So the thing to do is to, within 48 hours, say to yourself, okay, I'm going to ask for a blessing. I'm not going to tell Spirit what it is that I want. I'm going to let God bless me and be surprised. But I know that it's going to be a blessing because it's something that's so out of the ordinary that it's not like, you know, having someone that you know is going to come by to visit you. No, it's going to be so out of the ordinary. You know that the only way that it could have come is through a blessing, that this is your blessing from the Creator. So just you don't state what it is. You just say, okay, I'm going to step back and wait. And just say, okay, God, you can even give me a sign if in case I miss it, that this is the blessing. And in 48 hours, you will see it. It may not be anything as big as Moses parting the Red Sea, but it will be a blessing. But you're not telling God, you know, heal me or whatever. You just say, I want you to show up in a miraculous way. I'm not going to tell you what it is. I just want you to show up, but I would know without a shadow of a doubt that this came as a result of my requesting and asking. That's the first experiment. And in 48 hours, you would see it. The second experiment is to say, okay, because, see, everything we want already exists. We just haven't trained our minds to look for the good. We've trained our minds to deal with third-dimensional reality and to look for the worst. Even though we're saying affirmations every day, we're praying, we still don't believe it. So that's the reason why it is. Whenever you pray, your answer is always right there, but we're not trained to see it. So the second one, after you see your blessing manifest, the second one is, you say, to start training your mind, tell your mind that it's going to focus only on sunset beige cars. You're going to just, you know, you're not focused on any other color. You want to focus only on sunset beige cars. You will see, all of a sudden, hundreds of sunset beige cars. Now, those cars have always been there, but you haven't trained your brain to look for them. So by telling your brain, giving your brain that command, it will then start seeing. It will filter out all the other colors. You'll see them, but you won't pay attention to them. It will filter out the other colors and only focus or highlight for you the sunset beige cars. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay? Because, see, what we're doing now is we're training our brains. So we're training our brains. So that's the first part of experiment number 2. And I did these, and it definitely works. And then the second part of experiment 2, after you have seen the sunset beige cars, you start recording the number of sunset beige cars that you see. Because all of a sudden you're going to see them everywhere. Now, those cars have been there all along, but you haven't paid any attention to them. But now that you're paying attention to a specific thing, it will show up. You will see it because it was there all along. And then the next part of that would be butterflies. You're going to tell the butterfly, you're going to tell your brain, I'm going to look specifically for butterflies. and you see butterflies in women's as pins on jackets, as butterflies on cuffs, actual butterflies are in nature. All of a sudden, your brain, because your brain is being programmed to look for butterflies. And it's not that more butterflies are out. It's just that now you are focused on them because you're telling your brain to look for them. Mm-hmm. So now we're stepping into the field of the miraculous, because we're now allowing what we're asking Infinite Spirit, God, Allah, to give us. We're now seeing it because it's always there, but we've just tuned it out because it's not coming the way that we want it to come. So now as we start training our eyes to see, then the other things we can then we become more sophisticated. And I'll give some more examples. But those three will work. You do the first, ask for a blessing, and within 48 hours it's going to show up. Then after that shows up, then ask for more information, and it will show up. Okay? So if anyone else has any more questions, feel free to give us a call. So now, I was thankful to that caller for asking that question. We have some more activities that Pam had given us, too. She is saying, too, if your brain is anything like mine, prone to procrastination, easily confused and distracted. Changing your mind can be downright challenging. I like to think of it like housebreaking a puppy. You just keep taking it back outside and showing it a different reality until it finally realizes, wow, there's a whole big world out there, and it's a lot more fun to pee on trees and bushes and fire hydrants than on Pam's ready-owed house slippers. Okay? She used the puppy as an analogy. Your mind would be astonished by the beauty that's available when you put it on the spot. Deep peace will appear. Great ideas will materialize and expand. Joy will rise up. The only thing you need to do is devote your mind only to things you want. If you want peace, think of peace. If you want love, think of love. If you want Jimmy Choo pumps, think of Jimmy Choo pumps. Do not think about how peace looks impossible, or that love seems fleeting, or that there is no money in your bank account for Jimmy Choo pumps. Keep your mind focused only on what you want. And any time you begin to doubt, just go back to the training that I told you about in terms of training your mind to see certain things that you want to see. Just go back to the training, and it would definitely appear. So that's, we talked about experiment one and experiment two. Now, this is another experiment that was really foolproof. But we're going to talk about different stages. So for people who really want to have proof, what I'm giving you tonight is scientific proof that your brain can comprehend. It's not foo-foo. These are things that you're like, wow, and your brain cannot, your cognitive brain can't understand it, but it's okay. But these are actual exercises that would definitely help you expand your consciousness and magnetize to you anything that you want. Okay? So, what you're going to do now is, like I said, I gave you the first three exercises. And then she talks about the chains that bind. Sometimes we put ourselves in a box because of what's happened with our families and whatever. So even though we say we want to change, we can't see how it's going to happen. Now, everything I'm going to tell you, you're not going to understand how it's happening because it's beyond you. Like the butterflies all of a sudden appearing, that's beyond you. They were always there, but your brain didn't see them. And asking for a blessing, your brain won't be able to comprehend that. So just be comfortable with surrendering to the fact that you won't be able to have a logical explanation for a lot of the things I'm going to share with you. Okay. So now what we're going to do, too, is talk about, this is a really, really interesting story here. You've probably never heard of Peter and Eileen Caddy, but I'll bet the name Finehorn rings a bell. Remember that garden in Scotland that yielded cabbages big enough to knock over a postal truck? Well, Peter and Eileen Caddy are the folks who grew those 40-pound, you heard me correctly, who grew those 40-pound cabbages. Okay? In Scotland. And keep in mind that the average cabbage is only 4 pounds, and they grew 40-pound cabbages. And they did it by focusing their thoughts on a higher truth. They certainly didn't have anything else going for them. In fact, when the Caddies, their three sons, and fellow spiritual seeker Dorothy McLean moved into the trailer on that windblown peninsula jutting out into the North Sea, the land could best be described as dead and profitless. Nobody in their right mind would have chosen it as a spot to grow anything, let alone a garden. The soil, if you could call it that, consisted of rocks and sand. The gales were strong enough to knock over the average second grader, and their less than better homes locale was smack dab between a garbage dump and a dilapidated garage. But by focusing on a higher truth, they created a garden that can only be described as miraculous. Although it was the 40-pound cabbages that got all of the publicity, the Caddies also grew 65 other types of vegetables, 21 kinds of fruits, and 42 different herbs. And this is before they started adding flowers. I know what you're thinking, rich compost and good organic husbandry. But the truth is, the Caddies soil was so pathetic that the county extension agent said even compost couldn't help it. At the time they started their experiment in higher consciousness, the Caddies had never gardened, nor did they have money to invest in gardening supplies. They were broke, to put it mildly. Peter, who had managed a successful 4-star hotel, had been laid off, and the six of them were living on unemployment that amounted to roughly $20 a week. No, they started growing vegetables for one reason. They thought it might be a nice gesture to feed their three growing boys. But as they began aligning their consciousness with spiritual truth and nothing else, all sorts of strange things started happening. Bales of straw, fell off passing trucks just in time to mulch. Leftover bags of cement mix mysteriously showed up in a neighbor's trash bin just in time to pour a patio. Their plants, while the crops of their neighbors suffered, became resistant to diseases and pests. Eventually, people started flocking to the Caddies garden. And today, Finehorn is a prosperous spiritual community that attracts 14,000 seekers every year. As Peter says, you can bring about anything by your thoughts. Align yourself with God consciousness, and you can bring about truth in material form. What you think, you create. There is no power on earth that can cut you off from the source except your own consciousness. Okay? So what they did is they just got together and they started aligning their thoughts. And I'm going to give you another experiment to show you how thoughts are. Remember, because I told you how to align your thoughts to only see the beige cars. So now we're going to show you how to align your thoughts like the caddies did. Okay? So you two are a field of energy. Now, I'm not going to bore you with an entire text on quantum physics because I've read dozens, and believe me, the books are not very interesting. We're just going to get down to the core of doing the next experiment. And this experiment that I did, it was just so very interesting. Let me just talk about some basics in terms of the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. When Einstein discovered what Einstein discovered and what that famous equation E equals MC squared means is that mass and energy are basically two forms of the same thing. Energy is liberated mass, or matter, and matter is energy waiting to happen. There is a huge amount of energy, a preposterously huge amount, trapped in every living thing. You making the assumption that you are an average-sized human being contain no less than 7 times 10 to the 8th degree, whatever. Basically, what she was saying is that we think we are the bodies that we are. We look at a person, we think that that's all the person is, you know, by body weight or size or whatever. And we're so much more than that, and we're so much bigger than that. So what happens is that because we don't understand energy and understand that we can move everything with our thoughts because our thoughts are energy, and we're not solid mass. That's how people can use telepathy to help people call them, because they're sending the thought throughout the universe to help to connect with the person's brain, and the person responds. Okay. So now try this experiment. Bring your palms together now. For those of you listening in the audience, bring your palms together, palms of your hands, like you're about to clap. Okay? So now just bring your palms like you're about to clap, but stop 3 inches before your hands make contact. So you're going to stop 3 inches, have your palms facing each other, but you're not going to clap, and you're going to stop about 3 inches. Now twist your wrists so that your arms form an X. The wrist should be at the center of the X and 3 inches apart. So what you're going to do is cross your wrists over each other to form an X. And once your attention to the space between your wrists, now you're going to draw your attention to that space. And because your wrist contains several energy centers, the energies will connect. And you will feel some kind of sensation in between them. And now try moving your wrist about an inch closer and then out. What you can do is just move your wrist in and out, in and out, and you're going to feel the energy vibrating between it. And also another experiment that you can do is rub your palms together really quickly. Rub about 10 times. I'll give you a little moment to do that. Okay? Now stop. Now slowly pull your palms away from each other, and you will feel electric impulses between the palms of your hands. And keep going out further and further and further until you can't feel it. That energy that you feel, that's who you are. So this solid mass that you think you are not that. You are those energetic impulses that you feel now between your hands. Okay? As if you didn't already have enough weirdness in you to contend with, she says, I'm going to throw in one more detail. Everything in the physical world as we know it is connected to everything in the physical world. You are attached and engaged to one underlying universal energy field. So things appear separate because they're vibrating at different wavelengths, just as the note C vibrates at a different wavelength than B flat. So the pulsating energy field is the central energy of your being and your consciousness. Where is this field? Well, there's no place it's not. Everything in the universe is hooked up to the field. All the forms, whether African zebras, the hostas in your garden, or those melting icebergs. Your intelligence, creativity, and imagination interact with this. Okay? So, now what I want you to do, you can write this down because you may not have time to do this. This experiment was really, really interesting when I did it. Get two wire coat hangers and untwist the head of the coat hangers, the wire, and make them into one long line. Now bend the bottom to like maybe about 6 inches, so you can have like an L. You're going to have one long line and then like a small little L. And then to keep your hands from being kind of sore, you can get a straw and cut it in half, and you can cover the small little L on both of the hangers. So you're going to get two coat hangers, untwist the wire at the top, and you're going to make them into L's. And the long part, and then like the little L, the L part at the end. And you're going to cover it with a straw, the L part, so you can hold it comfortably in your hands. Then what you're going to do is act as if you're Matt Dillon in Gunsmoke, and draw and pull them out like they're guns. You know, and you're just going to hold one in your left hand, and because you have the straw at the base of it, it's not going to hurt your hand. So you're going to have one in your left hand and one in your right hand, and just hold it. You can probably sit in a chair and just keep your eyes focused straight ahead, and they're going to just go all over the place in the beginning because they're responding to your thoughts, so they're going to just flap all over the place for a moment. And then as your thoughts become more settled, then they will become settled. They would then become straight. Don't move to the right or to the left. Just stay focused. And then what you should do is think a thought that's really a stressful thought, a thought that's really, really not the best thought, not high vibrational, that was very stressful in the past or is stressful now. Think that thought. And watch those coat hangers. They're going to cross. They're going to come together and cross. Because you're thinking constricting energy, so it's going to fold in on itself. They're going to cross over and touch each other. And it's not going to be you. It's going to be your thoughts are controlling the wire coat hangers, believe it or not. And then the next thing you're going to do is think a very positive thought with the same coat hangers, and what's going to happen is the coat hangers are going to spread completely apart. You're not moving it. It's your thoughts. Your thoughts are moving wire coat hangers. Now, if your thoughts can move wire coat hangers, just think what your thoughts are doing every day in your life. And so this is Pam. These are her experiments, and she's showing you how your thoughts are things. Your thoughts are so powerful that they can move those coat hangers. And when I did, I was like, wow, and I could see it. And then what you can do after you move the coat hangers with the positive and negative thoughts, then just keep looking straight ahead, and then focus. Don't move your head, but turn your eyes to look at something to the right of you, and stay focused on the thing to the right. Those coat hangers will move slowly in that direction, and then center the coat hangers again, and then think of something to the left of you. Slowly, those coat hangers will move to the left of you. So these exercises, I said, wow, if my thoughts are doing this with the coat hangers, my thoughts are creating some really interesting things in my environment that I need to pay attention to. And so the exercise with the looking for the sunset cars or whatever, it's showing you how you can train your brain. But then after that, this is showing you how powerful your thoughts are to make sure you understand that you need to be aware so you can keep your brain trained, because everything in your life that's not to your liking, your brain has created it. Because the universe of the Most High God has said you can have anything that you want. So we then start creating things that we don't want, and we're thinking we're creating things only that we do want. No, whatever you give your attention to, that expands. That's what the coat hangers were showing you. When you start thinking loving thoughts, that expanded the coat hangers. They open up to receive the love. When you start thinking constricted, hateful thoughts or angry thoughts, it closed in, because you're closing, you're blocking off the energy of love when you're thinking those thoughts. And it's not to have you jump out of those thoughts immediately, because Abraham Hicks says that it's very challenging for human beings to do that. So all you do is just keep going up the next step above. If it's hate, to look at the next step on their emotional scale that's above hate. Then once you feel comfortable with that, then you go all the way up until you get to the place of contentment, love, and gratitude. But those coat hangers, when I saw that, I was like, wow, that is awesome. So people who need to be shown that this works, the energy works, and your thoughts are powerful, this would definitely show you how powerful your thoughts are and how you can change them. How you can change them, okay? So now we're going to go to the area, another experiment. Whatever you focus on expands. And she states, when I first heard my thoughts could bring material goods into my life, I did what any intelligent thinking person would do. I scoffed. But I also decided to give it a try. What else? What could it hurt to conduct a secret experiment? Andrea, my teacher, said to write down three things I wanted. That's all. I didn't have to zap them out of thin air. I didn't have to work out a budget. I just had to make a list. What the heck? I want a bike, a computer, and a piano. Within 2 weeks, I was the proud owner of a beautiful red mountain bike and an IBM PC Junior. The piano took a little bit longer, but some years ago, my friend Wendy, who was moving to Maryland, called and told me that if I'd come get it, I could have her beautiful cherry wood Kimball. My daughter, forced to take piano lessons, has been cursing me ever since. Yes, this is the chapter you've been waiting for, the chapter on how to manifest material things. It's a spiritual principle that attracts would-be believers like 15-year-old males to Megan Fox. Okay? Now, thoughts that move you are going to be, you're going to start paying more and more and more and more attention to your thoughts. And so you can see how you are now in control of your thoughts. And I'm going to give you some more examples of this. She gives a religious example. Jesus could never have brought Lazarus back to life and multiplied all those fishes and loaves if he'd been preoccupied by the desire for beachside residence. That said, so she's saying don't focus on the material thing first. Focus on the energy behind it, and the material thing would definitely come. I like to call this the Statue of Liberty principle. Even though this principle is the beacon that represents everything people think they want, a vacations to Jamaica, a big house in Malibu, it's actually way down on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's only on the first, maybe second rung. You need to get this principle down, of course, so you can take your mind off material worries and so that you can know the truth about who you are. But none of this stuff, it's what you really want, okay? So do not feel guilty. Want it. Walk toward it with all your heart and might, Just know there are higher rungs or higher principles, and that most people hoard material things out of fear. So they hoard money, they hoard paper towels, they hoard furniture. I know someone who has shoes and dresses and clothes with price tags still on them. Because sometimes people, you know, we think that because of our background, sometimes if we come from a poor background, we feel like we would go back there, so people just buy and buy and buy and never use those things. It's really unfortunate because that's not believing that the universe is plentiful and we give you your desire. So we keep buying things and hoarding them because we think we would never get them again. And that's out of fear. And fear, after all, is what we're attempting to move away from, right? Okay? Most people think they can incite change only by addressing God with some screech for help. But since we know God is the force that runs the universe, we also know every thought creates change. Every time we think anything, be it a silent, that skirt makes her legs look like John Travolta in Hairspray, or I'll commit hara-kiri if I don't get that raise, we influence the field of infinite potentiality. I think I should probably repeat that for every single thought affects the field of potentiality. So every thought that you have thought is creating or is either bringing things to you or limiting things. And we're not aware of it because we're just not in control. So this now is making you more in control of what you think. On one hand, we pray for things to work out, but on the other hand, we worry that they won't. At the same time we imagine a positive outcome, we secretly think optimism is a bunch of baloney. We want to be committed to a relationship with so-and-so, but what if he leaves? We want to make money, but didn't the Bible say something about camels and rich people in the eye of a needle? The force is literally bouncing off walls. Go that way. No. Walk that way. No. It's knocking around like a lightning bulb in a mason jar. It's being dissipated because we have no clear bead of what we really want. It's not that the field of potentiality isn't answering our prayers. It's just that we're praying for too many things. When you figure the average person has something like 60,000 thoughts a day, you come to realize that your life is being prayed about by a heck of a lot more than, please God, let me get out of this speeding ticket you uttered when you first noticed the flashing lights. Sure, you begged for peace of mind today, but you also spent 1,200 thoughts obsessing about that coworker who stole your website idea. Yes, you made the intention to think and grow rich, but you also devoted 500 thoughts to worrying about your overdue car payment. When you understand prayer for what it really is, it's easier to understand why that one-time plea to God doesn't always pan out. The only reason Jesus could walk on water was because 100% of his thoughts, prayers, believed he could. He had overcome the world's thought system that says only an idiot would be stupid enough to step out of the boat. There was not one doubt, not a single thought, prayer in his consciousness that didn't fully believe it. Your mind is so very powerful. No matter how badly you disrespect the privilege, no matter how ineffectual you feel, every single thought produces form at some level. Just because those thoughts are screwed up, and believe me, if you're human, at least some of your thoughts are screwed up, doesn't make them weak or ineffective. Weak and ineffective at getting you what you want, maybe, but never weak and ineffective. So what's happening is that whatever is showing up is because you have been thinking that thought that's disempowering, that thought has been weighing more on your mind than one that's really powerful and that's going to produce what you want. Okay? When you throw a tennis ball in the air, you can count it on coming back down. Granted, it may fall in the neighborhood, in the neighbor's petunias on the roof of the 7-Eleven, where you're likely to need a ladder to retrieve it, but it's guaranteed to come down. So your intention is just like that. It comes back just the way you set it out. Like Newton said in his famous third law of motion, for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. What you give out, what you pray about, you get back in equal measure. So if you send out thoughts of fear, you get back thoughts to be scared of. If you lie, you'll be lied to. If you criticize, you get criticized. But if you send out love, you get big, bounteous love back. If you send out blessings, you get blessed in turn. If you want to know what you're really praying for, stop and take a look at your life. You'll see your innermost thoughts, the real desires of your heart, the prayers no one knows about but you. Now she says, and this is so true, I've seen this happen with people. She says, a friend of mine was fearful of spiders. She used to worry that she'd reach into her makeup drawer some morning, and instead of grabbing a lipstick, she'd find her hands wrapped around a giant spider. This unfounded thought passed through her brain every morning for months until, guess what? She reached into her makeup drawer and grabbed a big, fat, hairy wolf spider. To put it another way, thought is created. The thoughts you hold in your mind, both conscious and unconscious, create what you see in your life. Every thought has a certain vibration. It boomerangs back to you according to its pitch, intensity, and depth of feeling. Your thoughts show up in your life in proportion with their consistency, intensity, and power. So, if you want anything to show up with intensity or power, you can see how much you've been thinking about it because it's going to show up. And when it shows up, we swear that we didn't put it out like that, but we did. There's no need to get into blame and all that. So we're not going to get into blame. We're going to do another experiment, like I've shown you, with the, to show you how your thoughts can move coat hangers. In this experiment, using nothing but the power of your thoughts, you would magnetize something into your life. Now, with this, you would set an intention. Okay? So with this one, you've done the coat hangers. You saw how the coat hangers can move. You asked for a blessing. You saw the blessing show up. You trained your brain to see on a sunset beige cars, and they will show up. You trained your brain to see only butterflies, and they will show up. So for this one, you will set an intention to draw a particular event or thing into your life. Be very specific, down to the exact make and model. Since you've only got 48 hours, it's probably best to pick something that won't drive your thoughts back to lack. For example, if you decide to manifest a BMW Z32.8 Roadster, it's probably possible your predominant thoughts would be, yeah, right, yeah, over my dead body. Needless to say, thoughts like that won't get you to where you want to go. So think of something that's pretty realistic for you to have happen, like a certain sum of money or someone that you hadn't heard from in a while to call you. So set your intention for that to happen within 48 hours, okay? So what you're going to do is you're going to say to yourself, I have scanned over the big catalog called the world, and for the sake of this experiment, have decided that this is what I want to intend to manifest, whatever it is, in the next 48 hours. I will focus on it with all my being. And I will remember that it is as easy to manifest a castle as it is a button. So you can manifest something small or something large. The universe doesn't get into the size. It's our mind. I saw something like it said on Facebook that said, the sky is not the limit. Our mind is. So the mind, for some people, would not allow you to think about manifesting a large sum of money because it tries to get into the how. And so if you know that you're not there to really have the money to manifest with a large sum, come up, intend to manifest a smaller amount and just get out of the way and let the universe manifest it for you within 48 hours. So everything I'm showing you would take probably about maybe about 4 weeks because each thing, you, before you go to the next experiment, you should complete the one that you haven't completed. So I'm giving you a lot of them, but you should not work on trying to have them all done at once because this is a gradual process. You're programming your mind to get out of the way and to let the superconscious, which is the God mind, really, really take over. Now, another thing, your connection to the field provides accurate and unlimited guidance. Inner guidance comes in many packages. Sometimes inner guidance comes completely unbidden. Like the night she said she was fretting about her newborn daughter who had a temperature of 106 degrees and she was worrying and pacing the floor. And suddenly a voice of startling clarity surfaced in Pam's mind and it said, "I didn't give you this great gift just to take it away." And she says, "I knew at that moment all would be well." And sometimes inner guidance offers messages as distinct as those eight-ball fortune-telling toys. You know, and sometimes it's going to be very subtle. So, but whenever it is, you would know. And then we get our brains involved because we second-guess it. So inner guidance is what you call your intuition. It's what you call your God's voice. But then we put our inner guidance, as she says, on the no-call list. Unfortunately, most of us have restricted the guidance we're let in. We've decided that neon signs, telegrams, and sealed letters from God are okay. But everything else is just, well, just a bit too frightening. We'd be scared witless if a scroll unrolled in front of us like it did with Michael Beckwith when he was playing a scroll literally unrolled in front of his face. Or an ascended master stepped in front of a TV during an episode of Mad Men. Our neural pathways have said, not me. I'm not up for that. If some angel showed up at the foot of our bed, we would probably call the police. It has to be challenging for our inner guidance. How would you feel if someone asked you a question and then turned his or her back, ignoring everything you said? And that's what we do. We ask God a question, and then he gives us signs. You know, nope, don't go that way. No, you know, when relationships are about to end, you get all the signs that the relationship is over. But we keep ignoring it. We're going to pray the person back. And we're going to, you know, and God is saying, this is not for you. Or that when the job is no longer for you, we're going to pray, and, you know, it's not for you. But we're going to pray it. And so we ask, and then we turn our back on it. You wouldn't just pick up your phone when it rings and start talking loudly. You say hello and listen to the person at the other end of the line. Here we are accusing the higher source of not giving us clear guidance, and we're the ones with our phones off the hook. When Neil Donald Walsh first sat down with a pen in his hand and some tough questions in his heart, he was shell-shocked when a voice he presumed to be God answered back. "Do you really want to know the answer, or are you just ranting?" Walsh, who somehow hesitantly agreed to play along, said, "Well, both. And if you've got answers, I'd love to hear them." Where do we pick up the foolhardy notion that inner guidance was restricted to a lucky few? A lot of it goes back to those myths we believe about God, that he's oh so mysterious and only on call on Sundays, like I talked about before. The part that was left out is that our inner guidance is reliable and constantly available. It's there anytime you choose to listen. Same as CNN is on anytime you decide to switch on the TV. It's that reliable. Okay? Michael Beckwith, the guy I mentioned earlier, who had a vision of a scroll, was looking up at a windmill one day. This is before he became a minister, when he wasn't completely convinced that his decision to pursue a godly calling was the right one. He said point blank, "Look, God, if you're listening, if this is what you really want me to do, have that windmill point in my direction." Even though it was a windy day and the windmill was spinning very fast in the other direction, no sooner than he said that than the windmill stopped, rotating on its normal axis and pointed straight at him. Of course, he had already had one or two mind-blowing experiences. To put himself through school, this is back when he wanted to be a doctor. Beckwith sold drugs, just to his friends, of course. Since he was a gregarious, open kind of guy, let's just say his business flourished. His marijuana dealership grew to both coasts and convinced him that if he played his cards right, he could retire completely at the age of 24. But he knew something was off. His inner guidance kept prodding, giving him bizarre dreams, strongly suggesting there had to be a better way. He decided on his own to give up drugs, to follow that better way. He told all his friends that it was over. He was retiring. On his final drug deal, the one that would get rid of the last of his supplies, he was busted by federal agents. Now keep in mind that not only did he have in his possession 100 pounds of pot, but he also had large sums of cash, guns, and hot cameras. Still, his inner voice told him, "Everything is going to be okay." As he prepared for trial, his friends thought he was crazy. "Why aren't you fretting and pacing the floor and thinking of strategies to get out of this bad rap?" they asked him. "I was guilty," he said, "but I was also assured by God that everything was going to be okay." By that time, he'd seen a grand division. He went to trial. His lawyer was Robert Shapiro, pre-OJ days, then just launching his career. He went to trial peaceful and believing that no matter what, he was loved and cared for by this very real presence. Sure enough, Michael Beckwith got off on a technicality. And when the judge freed him with the comment that he never wanted to see him again, Michael knew that he never would. Sometimes the field of infinite possibilities even manages to get through to people who scoff at it. So sometimes when we're not listening, you know, our inner guidance, our angels, our teachers, our ancestors still are able to get through because we tapped into the field. Now, the exercise that you can do, this one, all right, just say to your inner guidance, "Okay, inner guidance, I need to know the answer to this question," whatever the question is, and you've got 48 hours, and make it snappy. So this is the fifth experiment that I've given you. You've had four. You had the first one, you were asking for a blessing. The second one, you were asking to see sunset cars, beige cars, and on one day, and then the second day you went to see the butterflies. The third one you had the coat hangers, the wire coat hangers, and you made them like an L. You had the long part hanging out, and then you made the bottom parts about 6 inches fold into an L, and you put straws over the bottom part so that the candles wouldn't hurt your hands, and your thoughts were moving the hangers about. Then the next one, you just ask God for for some miraculous thing, money or whatever, and you gave him 48 hours. And then this one, you're going to ask your inner guidance, be it your teachers, whatever, to show up, to let you know that they're there and that they're acting in your behalf. Your thoughts and consciousness impact matter. This is the last one before the show ends. Dr. Masaru Emoto spent 15 years researching the effects of human speech, thoughts, and emotions on physical matter. Dr. Emoto chose one of matter's four traditional elements, water, to see how it responds to words, music, prayers, and blessings. Using more than 10,000 samples of water, Emoto and his research assistants spoke to, played music for, and asked monks to recite prayers over the water. The samples were then frozen, and the resulting ice crystals were examined under a microscope. In case you're wondering what water has to do with anything, look at this. Water is present everywhere, even in the air. And since the human body, and indeed the earth, consists of 70% water, it stands to reason that if words and thoughts impact water on its own, they will also affect larger, more complex systems also made up of water. What Emoto found is that when scientists treated the water kindly, by saying such things as I love you and thank you, the resulting water crystals became clear and beautifully formed. But when Emoto and his team talked negatively to the water, screaming such snide remarks as, I hate you, or you idiot, the crystals formed dark, ugly holes. Okay? When Elvis Presley's Heartbreak Hotel was played, the resulting frozen crystals split in two. In one photograph, it shows how a sample from the dam of Fujiwara Lake, starting out as a dark and amorphous blob, is completely transformed after a priest prays over it for just 1 hour. The ugly crystal turned into a clear, bright, white, hexagonal crystal within a crystal. He also found that prayer could create new types of crystals that had never before been seen. We in the West are not taught about energy and the power of our body-mind. Instead of being trained to tune into our innate intelligence, we're told, here's a doctor, here's a nurse. When something's wrong, consult with them. Coaches tell us if we're good enough to make the basketball team. Teachers tell us if our art is up to snuff. We're taught to turn over our power to forces outside of ourselves. So now what we have to do is just start looking at how we give up our power. Matter does not control you. You control matter. So what we have to do is there are people who have align themselves with the spiritual thoughts of God and completely allow their bodies to heal. And we hear about those things. Oh, yeah, that happened to this person, but it can never happen to me or for me. It can definitely happen. And what I am suggesting to people is that you align yourself with the whatever your belief system is. You align yourself with the Torah, the Bible, the Quran, whatever your belief system is, your mantras, you just keep aligning yourself and reading the rules or the metaphysical tools that are in those texts, and just align yourself with that energy and just talk it so much that you become it. Talk positive thoughts to yourself. Keep saying them until you become the positive thoughts. Talk to your money. Bless your money as the Christ did the loaves of fishes. One of the things I've learned from my metaphysical teacher, Dr. Joyce Reynolds, who is really phenomenal, she says, turn your money over. Like when you get dollar bills, $5 bills or whatever, count your money differently. Say if you have five ones, put them on your left leg and separate them. One, two, three, four. Then you pick up the first dollar bill, turn it over, and you put it on your right leg because you want it the face down because you're looking at the words, "In God we trust." So you want the face to be down so you can see those words. So rather than saying $1 when you put it on your right leg, you know, I would say $1,000. Then pick up the next dollar bill and say, okay, $2,000. And my brain is looking at "In God we trust." So the brain is like, yeah, I'm trusting God for this to come about. The third dollar bill, put it down in right leg, $3,000. Then the next one, $4,000. Then the next one, $5,000. Then you pick up the pack of ones and you put them back on the left leg again and you start over. Pick up the $1 bill, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000. And you keep counting your money like that, counting your money, counting your money, counting your money. And the brain then will latch onto that because the brain doesn't know any difference between the $1 bill or the $1,000 bill. The subconscious mind, remember, is getting its information from the superconscious or from the conscious. So if the superconscious is telling your subconscious that that's not a $1 bill, that's a $1,000 bill, the subconscious then has to go about attracting that to allow that to happen for you. Because it then starts pulling in, it's the power, it starts pulling in everything in the universe. It starts looking at the field of potentiality. It starts seeing things as being unlimited. So it doesn't say, well, my $5,000 can only come from my bank account or from my job or from my cousin. Because there are people who may not even know you, who may include you in their will. You don't know how the universe is going to help your money manifest. But as long as we keep telling the universe how it's going to manifest, then it has to comply. So start counting your money differently. Per Joyce Reynolds, and it works. Start pulling your money out and always keep money on you. I have to start doing that again, too, because if you don't have money on you, you're not honoring it. Most of us use debit cards or credit cards or checks, you know. And so we have no relationship to and with money because we don't see it. It's just like a long-lost friend. How can you have a relationship with that friend if you never see the friend? So the same thing with money. So start carrying money on you and start counting your money every day, counting your money, using the principle that I just talked about. And you will see your money multiply, like Jesus multiplied the loaves of bread and the fishes. And the fish, you will be able to do the same thing because everything is energy. So I've given you about six experiments. And go out and buy the book, E-Squares by Pam Grout, G-R-O-U-T. It is a book definitely worth having. It's right up there with Florence Govershin's books, you know, The Game of Life and The Power of the Wand. Your wand is your word, the power of the spoken word. It's right up there with all of her books. And it's also right up there with Dr. Joyce Reynolds. Go to her website, Joyce Reynolds. No, Joyce at Joyce Reynolds, RENNOLDS.com. And she tells you also how to script, how to write your future. And go to her website. And now Pam Grouse, and Diane Collins, whom I had on my show. Diane had a phenomenal, she made a phenomenal about how to have your life change and choosing the possibilities like we're talking about. Rather than having limited possibilities, we can now choose what we want. So I thank you for joining us this evening, and I know that you will have not a prosperous week, but an opulent week. Remember that your mind is the only limitation in your world, and from having heard this presentation this evening, please play it and allow others to listen to it. And you will definitely be able to have more. I have a caller. I'm going to end the show. For those of you who want to listen, you can call in at 818-572-8023 and press 1. And caller, just remain on the line, even though I'm ending the show on the air. We will talk privately, okay? And be blessed, and we will talk next week.
I release all disappointment from my mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional body. 'Cause I know that spirit guides me, and love lives inside me.